Thank you for tuning in to Summary Judgment, where Austin personal injury attorneys Josh Fogelman and Aaron Von Fladern of FVF Law discuss the ins, outs, and in-betweens of personal injury cases. Hey, Josh.
Hey, good morning, Aaron.
Good morning to you. We are not doing our normal bit this morning. I'm not sitting here with a dad joke. I don't have anything goofy to say.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
I'm holding back.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Okay. I'm jumping in today because we have guests. One of the six or seven people who listen to this podcast told someone that we were here, and they told someone, and we ended up getting guests on our show. So this is a big day.
Should we tell the audience that we had to pay for the guests?
No.
Okay, good. We'll cut that part out then.
Why don't you introduce our fine guest today?
All right, I'll do that. We have Lauren Bush and Sarah Shavey, both students at the University of Texas School of Law, and brought here together to be with us because they both recently participated and performed extremely well in a writing competition hosted by Baylor Law that FVF Law sponsors called The Paper Chase. So welcome and congratulations. Why don't both of y'all or one of y'all kind of tell us a little bit about what the competition was about, and then each of you talk to us about why you decided to participate in it.
Sure. So it's a closed packet competition in which we wrote a motion to dismiss. So we were given a number of cases and just said, just told to write a 7-page motion to dismiss without doing any outside research. The case was about a retaliatory arrest in which really pertinent Fifth Circuit and U.S. Supreme Court precedent was involved. And we were arguing that a Fifth Circuit interpretation of some recent U.S. precedent was binding on the district court, and that therefore they should dismiss a claim because the Fifth Circuit's precedent barred it.
Got it. Lauren, do you remember kind of generally what the facts were in this kind of hypothetical situation and what kind of the general like concept or nature of the dispute was?
Yes. It's been a few months, so correct me if I get any of these facts wrong, but from what I can remember, the plaintiff had gone to like a rally of some sort, right? And then the speaker had gone into some territory that had made the audience members upset. And there was some, you know, shouting and name calling and things of that sort. And I think the plaintiff was involved a little bit maybe in some of that. And then she got arrested, and it was retaliatory arrest in the sense of that she was, you know, exercising her First Amendment rights.
Yeah. And I've participated in some of these competitions before when I was in law school. And usually when you're presented with a set of facts, it sort of touches upon an area of the law where the law is sort of unclear. And so the idea is you kind of got to pick a side, or you're given a side, and you have to sort of articulate how you think the United States Supreme Court would evaluate and rule on that issue if, in fact, that sort of a situation were to come to fruition. Is that kind of also the situation here?
Yeah, we were really arguing that the Fifth Circuit's interpretation of the U.S. Supreme Court fell a certain way, and that the evidence of the retaliatory nature of the arrest had to be excluded because of the Fifth Circuit's kind of binding precedent. So it was less about how we thought the U.S. Supreme Court would deal with it, and more about how we were arguing the Fifth Circuit already has dealt with it.
So let me see if I can summarize the case. And I'm going to do it in the kind of layperson fashion, which is a person shows up at a rally. They say something like they call this politician a racist or something like that. And the crowd gets agitated. The police arrest this person who's a protester. The protester says, you know, this is a retaliatory arrest. I have First Amendment rights. And then the police say, no, you were inciting violence. You know, that's not protected speech. And then the protester says back, hang on, you didn't arrest other people. You just arrested me because I was the one criticizing the politician. And then that is that like the fact set? Okay.
Yeah. And the argument is that I think it's not a retaliatory arrest as long as there, you know, was another basis for the arrest. And as you had mentioned, like inciting violence here was the kind of argument that we were making.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed reading how, you know, how you guys put it together. I noticed that you did something that I know I was trained to do in law school. It's not intuitive. And that is basically to make your arguments in the headlines. And so I would read y'all's headlines, and it would basically, if the judge wasn't paying any attention at all and was, you know, on an airplane, reading the brief in between vacations or whatever the judge is doing, they could just look at that and kind of figure out, okay, quickly, this is why they win. And so I really thought it was compelling, and it was just, you know, impressive to me. I'm someone who came into law school thinking I was a great writer and immediately figured out that I'm not as good as I thought I was. And legal writing is a very peculiar way to write. Did y'all have similar experiences with the way you kind of thought about writing and then how you think of it now?
I was in undergrad, I was a math major. So I actually came into law school being absolutely terrified of writing just because that I felt like it wasn't my strong suit. But I think in a way that almost gave me a leg up from all of the other people who had more writing heavy college backgrounds, because legal writing is so different. So I feel like a lot of students have to untrain what they thought that they know, because you don't really take, like, legal writing is a new kind of writing. And so I think me coming in with not much writing experience really helped. And I also feel like legal writing can be, in certain circumstances, like really formulaic. And so I really thought that my math major kind of helped me, you know, get you, or like I was more comfortable with legal writing than I am with like fluffy English writing, I guess.
Right. What did you think, Sarah?
Yeah, that's really interesting that the clean slate was kind of a nice approach. I was coming from a very different background. I worked as a journalist before I decided to go to law school. So I'd had quite a bit of writing experience. But as y'all said, it's very different writing legally than it is writing for a standard public audience. I think one thing that is kind of common between them is trying to take complex either narratives or complex concepts and explain them in a way that doesn't appear confusing, because you're either trying to explain something to the public or sway a judge. And so I think that's where a lot of those headlines and like those headings come in for me. It's like, okay, let me just try and make this into one bite-sized piece that the public or the judge can easily understand. And hopefully that helps.
And you know what's frustrating is that you're trying to write, but you're forced to use the language of the courts who have come before and written opinions before. And so sometimes they hand you something, as in this case, where I think this, the main, one of the core tenets of the law in this area has like three double negatives in the statement. And I'm reading it three times and I said, this person got an award? We paid for this award? And then I'm reading it, I'm like, wait, they're quoting the court and it's not their fault.
Yeah.
So anyway, you have to deal with curveballs like that, right?
Really clunky language a lot of the times.
Was this the first competition y'all had participated in, a writing competition?
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. It's a voluntary competition, right? So what prompted you to want to participate in it?
I just had more free time last semester than I did in any semester 2L. I don't think it's open to 1Ls, or maybe it is, but I just had more time and really wanted to get a little bit of experience. And the motion to dismiss, I think, was also appealing because I had never drafted one. And so I thought that would be a cool learning experience.
Yeah, pretty similar. You know, we really learn primarily memos and briefs in our writing courses. And so I kind of wanted to see how to apply it to a new scenario, which was the motion to dismiss. And it also was just a really interesting set of facts. And it's been going up on appeal. So it's been interesting to kind of follow not this exact case, but the case that the precedent it was based on.
Yeah. You know, being a lawyer can be really liberating in some ways, because you're equipped with things that a lot of society doesn't have. You know, first and foremost, with your law degree, you get a seat at the table. You know, there's a saying that lawyers run the world. I hope that's not true, but there is some truth to it insofar as, you know, a lot of the rules that we all live by and a lot of the change that happens with those rules and changes the way we live comes through the law. And so once you have that law degree, you're sort of armed with something that the rest of society is not. And that that allows you to sort of be more of your authentic self, because you've got this sort of an internal power once you have that degree in your hand, once you're out there. And then there's all the other things you layer on top of it, the skills. So trial law is a particularly, you know, weird set of skills to have. Writing well, good legal writing is this like superpower to me. You know, this is when I look at all the lawyers in our community here in Austin who have really pulled the rest of us along. You know, we have all these lawyer groups we belong to, people that volunteer their time, help other lawyers with challenges, the structure, you know, understanding the structure of the law between federal and state law and where they meet. Those people are great writers almost every time. It's the people that are able to sit for hours and hours and really dig deep who tend to be the people who become like the pillars of our legal community. So I think it's really exciting that y'all have done this. Good things to come. And I hope you stay here in Austin, at least if you can. Are you both in Austin, or where are you going to be?
I'll be in Austin, yes.
Okay.
I'll be moving to Arkansas for a year for a clerkship, but then I'll be in Dallas after that.
Okay. Well, Dallas is close enough. Just come back and see us.
Talk to us about the clerkship that you're going to participate in.
I'll be clerking for Judge Bobby Shepherd. He's on the Eighth Circuit, and so there'll be quite a bit of writing in that experience, I think.
Yeah. I did a postgraduate clerkship at the Texas Supreme Court here, and it was something that I hadn't really considered doing until I interned there the summer before. And that was really just, I had free time and I had the opportunity to do it, and I did it. And I really wasn't interested in legal writing. And I'll tell you, you know, the year that I spent training to be a high level legal researcher and writer beyond that, which I learned in law school, which was also extremely helpful, really laid the foundation for the entirety of my practice of law. So I think going to do a clerkship like that, where you're going to have that exposure with people who are really outstanding at that craft, is something that'll serve your career really well. What drew you to the appellate clerkship that you're going into?
I mean, kind of what you described, with the ability to develop writing, but also to just really hone in on specific legal issues. Kind of, as you were saying earlier, it's so fun to just take that deep dive and really figure out what's going on and then try and resurface and convey it to others. And I love learning those and I love writing about those. So it really feels like it's the perfect fit.
Yeah, it's a great idea. We'd like to learn a little bit from both y'all. Like, what drew y'all to want to go to law school to become an attorney to begin with? And Lauren, we can start with you.
Yeah, sure. So I went to college thinking I wanted to go to law school. And I think I took like one political science course, like maybe American government. We were reading the Federalist Papers. I was a freshman in college. I was like, this is absolutely not for me. I'm not going to go to law school. And then I kind of fell into, you know, math, did math for a couple years and just wasn't really satisfied with it. And I had, you know, some family or in-laws that had gone to law school who had also come from a math background. And so she kind of gave me that push to be like, you know, just because you're a math major doesn't mean you can't go to law school. I know it seems like an untraditional path. So she kind of gave me that final push to go. I think I just really like, you know, critical thinking and problem solving. And I think that's a big part of your job as a lawyer. So.
Well, so much of math is logic.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's what a great skill to have developed prior to this sort of career path. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think that when I was growing up, you know, a lot of, in going to college, a lot of people sort of discussed that political science was like the most appropriate path. Mm-hmm. Just learning about, you know, the governmental processes. But the reality of it is all sorts of life experiences end up sort of factoring into the way that you approach the practice of law, the way that you learn about the law, the philosophies you develop, and honing in really what you want to do once you achieve your law degree and pass the bar and begin the practice. So I think there's not really a right answer.
You know?
How about you, Sarah?
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, I have a very different background from Lauren. I studied music in college, and then I had done a few different things, journalism and some other work, before deciding I wanted to go to law school. But I was kind of motivated by a lot of the same reasons, the problem solving, the critical thinking, and also The service to clients, I love that law is an industry where you're providing a service to others and pretty much in any part, in any practice. So I was really excited to kind of engage in that.
That's a great demeanor to have. I think we've always preached, FEF, that we want a service mentality from our lawyers. I think on TV, you see these big egos. You see people that are kind of like acting like rock stars. But in real practice, the really great lawyers put their clients on their back and take them up the mountain. And that's really what you should be proud of. If you're able to do that, if you have that mindset, I think it's going to take y'all far.
Yeah. And now, Lauren, we understand that you're staying here in Austin. You're going to go to Jackson Walker.
Yes.
And you're going to get into the commercial litigation world. Mm-hmm. What draws you specifically to litigation? Are you excited about that? That's kind of a hyper specialized skill set, a lot of arguing in the courtroom, a lot of motion practice. What draws you to that? What do you hope to sort of learn and gain there?
Yeah, I'm very excited to be joining their litigation group. I think what drew me originally was honestly my 1L fall writing course. I just like loved the research and I loved the writing. And you know, you go to a bunch of networking events, your 1L fall, talking to other like firms, and I expressed, you know, I really enjoyed research and writing. And so many people had said, you know, if you really like that, you should consider litigation. And so I had was a summer associate in the litigation group for 2 summers and just really liked that kind of work, the drafting of the motions. And I think it's really a really cool experience to, you know, get a case and from the start be able to craft like strategy and how you're going to approach it and the arguments that you're going to make.
Outstanding. And was that with Professor Mason by chance? Did you take Lori Mason? Either of you have Lori Mason's class? She's an amazing professor at UT. But so in Dallas, Sarah, what's kind of your plan after your clerkship?
Yes, I'm planning to go to Weil Gotshal and do complex commercial litigation there. Very similar.
Weil's a massive global player. So Jackson, but these are both very prestigious firms. But for the listeners who may not know, Jackson Walker and Weil Gotshal, like outstanding firms. And you know, it's a great way to start, even if you don't end up in that kind of like robust, large firm practice. It's a great way to kind of learn things the right way. Cause that's something that I think, I don't want to say it's big law, cause I think Jackson Walker's, I don't know if they would call themselves big law or not. Weil Gotshal definitely fits that mold. But they have a certain way of doing things, a certain way of training people. And they're more patient than, say, the boutique firms who are going to hire someone. It's like, you need to be ready to do everything within 6 months. And you may or may not be doing it right, but we need you to do that. You know, that's just the model of the smaller firms. So hopefully you're going to get trained right and probably meet a ton of people. That's the other thing, is that those firms just have large networks. So I hope that works out well for y'all.
So before y'all go, do you have any questions for us about practicing attorneys? And it's okay if the answer is no.
One of my favorite questions is, do you have, you know, one tip for a young lawyer who's just starting out?
I have a tip I've stole from another lawyer.
Yeah.
And it's one word, and it's commit. You know, there's a, you have an image already of what a great doctor looks like. You don't imagine that person spending tons of time at the bar. You don't imagine, or, you know, drinking. You don't imagine that person getting in fights, petty fights with other people. You have an image of that person, and that person hopefully has that same image for themselves. Lawyering and doctoring, really no different in that regard. Once you decide you're going to take this on, the service mentality and the commitment are what's going to make you long-term satisfied. It's what's going to allow you to find that meaning in what you're doing. Working towards mastery is something that will be self-fulfilling. I mean, your whole life, it's going to be fulfilling and will give you purpose. And so now's the time to choose, you know?
Yeah, I would say, you know, law can be a great source of joy. What you accomplish with your clients and the challenges that you're going to face that seem insurmountable at the beginning. But by the time you ascend that mountain, the things that you've learned along the way and what you've accomplished and the lessons that you've learned and the hardships you've endured are just incredibly fulfilling. There's nothing like it. Very high highs and very low lows. When I was young, when I first started in the practice of law, I worked at a general practice firm sort of by design. I really didn't know exactly what I wanted to do within the practice of law other than I knew I wanted to litigate. So going to a general practice firm gave me the opportunity to have exposure to a variety of different practice areas and ultimately led me to find my passion, which was personal injury law and continues to be personal injury law. So I would say, you know, I understand that, you know, you're going to a big firm, you're going to be, or you're going to a prestigious firm where the work's going to be really challenging. I'm sure the hours are going to be really challenging. You're going to be faced with challenges that you've never faced up to this point in the academic world. And it can be overwhelming, but take the time, especially early in your career, to choose your path wisely. Make sure that before you pot commit to a particular area of practice, keep an open mind when you're encountering other people in other practice areas. Take the time to learn about what the lifestyle is for those practice areas, what the day-to-day is like in those practice areas, and take the time to choose the right path that's going to give you kind of a lifetime of joy and fulfillment, and make sure that it's the actual craft that you really want to hone. Because as Aaron said, you know, the practice of law can be really defeating. There's a reason why mental lawyers are frequently on the top of the list of people with mental health issues, drinking disorders, and a lot of negative can come from it because it's so heavy. You take it home with you so much. But if you can find the practice area that really brings you fulfillment, it can just really bring a lifetime of meaning and purpose. So take your time, especially earlier in your career, and don't lock yourself psychologically into a particular career path or into a particular practice area.
Y'all, thanks again for being here.
Yeah, well, you guys, both very impressive. It's outstanding to accomplish this kind of success in a really competitive writing competition. And I mean, even getting to where you were at getting admitted to UT Law in and of itself is a feat, let alone just excelling at that institution and putting yourselves in a position for success. So congratulations to both of you for what you've accomplished so far. We can just sitting across from you, the energy y'all have. I think y'all both have a very bright future ahead of you. We're appreciative that you've been generous with your time with us today, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for helping host the competition.
Yeah, happy to do it. Happy to do it. So thank you all for being here.